This episode is sponsored by Jabra. To learn more about the Jabra Sport Pulse wireless earbuds, visit jabra.com/embracerunning. You are listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 196 for April 2nd, 2016.
Welcome back. As we tried to get back in the groove of things, I think might be the best way to put it. The last episode, we gave our recap of the North London Half Marathon and kind of talked a little bit about our trip. And I think we both kind of struggled with just getting back into the groove of things.
Yeah, just back into the routine.
I know it's been a huge struggle for me, but so what do we got today? We're going to go through some news stories, of course, kind of catch up what's going on there. Then we're going to kind of talk about shoe prices, actually, an interesting study on that. So that's the plan. Let's kick it off with the catch-up part. Not like ketchup and mayonnaise or anything, just the catching up on what's going on with us.
What's going on?
Yeah, so anything you want to share?
I'm supposed to be training for Grandma's Marathon.
I like that. Supposed to be.
This week didn't go so well, mainly because I hardly ran at all, but, it was just, you know, after travel and everything, I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm just saying why I think it didn't happen. It's just been kind of an odd week. I mean, just trying to get back into the routine of life. And there was a lot of different little things that needed to be taken care of, you know, post vacation. And so unfortunately, running kind of took a backseat this week, but still have a training schedule for Grandma's. So we'll be getting back on that. I guess I'll just mention it now. My activity streak of 30 minutes every day, which I haven't mentioned in a little while, and for good reason. So thanks to Megan, who privately called me out on that. So I appreciate that. It pretty much went out the window, I think, like mid-February, where there was like some travel involved, and it just, there was like a day where I just didn't get it done. And then once that happens, it's like, ah, you know, like I already ruined the streak. But you know, and then actually when Megan sent a message over, I thought about it, and I'm like, well, why can't I just pick it up now? Like, it doesn't mean that because I missed some days in February and March that I can't start doing it now. Obviously it won't be a full year, but like, why can't I start now? So so I did tell Megan that I was going to be starting on April 1st, which I did. So I'm back on it on a streak of 2 days. But yeah, I guess I just wanted to mention that now. So we'll see how that goes. And I'll try to, I mean, it's something that I want to do. You know, nobody's forcing me to do
it.
But, and I'm saying it out here so that I could be held accountable. And you guys are doing a good job of doing that. So I do appreciate that, because if Megan hadn't mentioned it, I probably would have just not gotten back on it. And I, you know, when I thought about it, I'm like, well, why can't I just restart? Like, who's keeping me from doing that?
Exactly. So, it's whatever you want to make of it.
I mean, right.
It's not some official thing.
Right. I know. It's official in my head. So I'm officially restarting it. So.
Okay.
I think that was it for me. Pretty much there just wasn't much to talk about. So, how about you?
I probably have even less, kind of same thing, struggling back after vacation and just really haven't run much at all, since getting back. And so, we're recording this on a Saturday, which is kind of strange for us just to begin with, but
yeah,
that's a
time constraint thing. It's still kind of odd. Yeah.
We're kind of still on a screwed up schedule, but, I guess I'll be back to things, I think, starting tomorrow, because we actually have a race tomorrow. So that'll be the kickoff to kind of getting back in the groove and trying to refocus after the fun of vacation. But that's what's not going on with me. The only other story that I'll share is that, so yesterday was April Fool's Day, which I think we actually recorded last year on April 1st, if I recall correctly. I'm not positive on that, but I'm not really a big fan of April Fool's, just kind of a, it has become a silly day. It's kind of a day just to ignore the internet in general. I think real life pranks are awesome stuff to do, but save that, I think, for any other day than April 1st. But I'm getting really long-winded trying to get to a story. But so today's April 2nd on Sunday. Today's Saturday, April
2nd. Oh, my 2nd. God.
I'm really screwed up. So I was doing some research on a race because, I don't know, I think my biggest hobby might actually be looking up races more than actually running.
And actually running. We're going to have to get your training plan on that.
On what races to look up when.
Yeah, and like, you can only do it certain days. You can't do it on back-to-back days.
That's not a bad idea. So I was looking up the Vancouver Marathon, which happens, I think, usually the first weekend in May every year. And mm-hmm. it's a race that's kind of been on my radar, and I want to do it eventually. So I was just looking up the website, looking at some information and stuff, and then I wanted to take a look at the course. And I went ahead and, you know, I'm on the front page of the website, and I see a little course map. I click on it. Okay, it looks like a pretty cool course, actually. Never run it before. I think you have a friend that ran it, said it was a cool race. And then I start reading the part below it, and I guess it's supposedly 45th anniversary, and they're, instead of doing a 42, what's a marathon? 42.2?
K.
42.2K.
Yeah.
They said the race, because of the 45th anniversary, was going to be 45K. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading this going, well, that's weird. That's kind of silly. I'm like, what if I only want to do a marathon? I don't want to add any extra mileage to my marathon.
Yeah, it's funny because you're reading this off to me too. And I'm like, wait. I'm like, so that's the only option? I'm like, is there... And yeah, we were both trying to like figure that out as you're reading it to me.
And then I keep going and I'm like, oh no, we're good, because there's like an extra loop that adds that extra part. And I was like, okay, this is a lot like Route 66 and their, what is it, Run to the Center of the Universe. It's a little extra detour and you get to do that. And I was thinking, oh, okay, that's actually not a bad idea. That's a cool idea. And I was kind of disappointed that there didn't seem to be any extra metal or any extra anything that you get for that. I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's weird. Whatever. I keep reading. And then I finally get to the bottom and I realize that was just their April Fool's thing that they did apparently yesterday. And so
they gotcha.
They got me. I felt silly. I mean, I was on the lookout for that kind of stuff yesterday on actual April 1st.
Right.
But come April 2nd, I thought I was good, but apparently instead of clicking on their normal course map page, I think I was clicking on their blog, which just took me to a blog post from yesterday. So I felt silly. I'll still stick to the point that I actually think it's a good idea to kind of make it a 45K and then maybe give a little extra something to somebody.
But then have the option of still having the marathon distance.
Right. It's just that detour little loop that you can do. So although it's a joke, I think it's actually a really good suggestion that they should do at some point. So. All right, that's my very long-winded story. Let's kind of jump into things here. Am I mentioning recent races? I'm not sure. R&R Dallas, we talked about North London Half. Oakland Running Festival, which is kind of a local one.
Mm-hmm.
That happened here. Let's talk about running and soap. Odd combo.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's true.
You shower all, after. Hopefully. Well,
we hope
you should shower afterwards. So, yeah, but this is not about that, actually. There's a soap incident, I'll call it.
Soapgate.
Yeah, there you go. I was trying to think of it, but my brain didn't put it together. So anyways, so runners actually faced a disappointing post-race food experience at the Qingyuan Marathon in China last month when many runners, unfortunately, bit into what they thought was a grape-flavored bar or snack, only to learn that it was actually grape-scented soap.
Oops.
Yeah, that sucks. Have you ever bitten into soap?
I have not.
But you've tasted soap. I'm assuming on purpose, but...
I've never licked a bar of soap or anything.
No,
but, I guess,
but you've never had any soap in your mouth. I mean, like,
Just take a shower or something. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's not the greatest tasting thing, even just when it's just like suds, you know?
Well, I was going to say, I've never seen a race where they give you soap.
Yeah, so, of course, after they bit into it, many of the soaps were seen discarded in the area with like a...
One bite
mark, and then maybe like the little chunk that they bit off, like... you know, off to the side. So the package that was actually part of the post-race goodie bag had a picture of grapes on the package. And there was writing on the package that indicated it was soap. It was saying it was like, I think like fruity scent or something like that. Mm. But the writing was in English. And this was at a marathon in China.
Right.
So there was some obvious miscommunication there as far as like you look at it and you see the grapes and you're okay, I just finished a race. All right, let me try this out. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are some pictures that had been posted about it on social media, and the bar is just, it just looks like a purple bar, mm-hmm. which if you told me that was like a, I don't know, some carb something, you know, that was grape, I'd believe it. Yeah. You know, so, but it also, if you told me it was soap, I'd believe it too, because it kind of looks that way too. So, race organizers actually, you know, later admitted that they had made a mistake with the soap in terms of not making it more clear that it was soap and mm-hmm. not something that you can eat. And they were thinking more along the lines of providing something for the runners to be able to use afterwards, you know, like when they took a shower or a bath. Right. So that's what they were thinking. And they actually said out of like everything in the goodie bag, I think that was the most expensive item that they had included. So,
interesting.
Yeah, which it's kind of sad that then it just got thrown away by so many people.
Yeah, I guess it's not so crazy to get soap then in the goodie bag. It's just should be in the local language. It's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to some timing issues? Local race timing issues. They do happen.
They do happen. Yeah. And actually happened at the Oakland Running Festival, which you mentioned, just happened a couple weeks ago here in the area, which is, it's a pretty, big event because it has lots of distances. I think it has like a 5K, half marathon, a marathon. I can't remember if it has a 10K, and then it has a relay. I mean, so there's just a lot of events for that whole weekend.
For everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. So there was actually an issue with the timing system at the Oakland Running Festival this year, unfortunately. Although it's not clear what exactly happened, there were incorrect times for a lot of people of varying distances. So it wasn't just like the marathon or just the half marathon or just the 5K. And there's actually some runners who didn't even participate in the race. They had registered for it, but decided not to participate that actually had finishing times.
Right.
There was, I think, at least one person who ran the marathon that was given a finishing time that was a Boston Marathon qualifying time, which was not what he or she had ran.
Right.
So they were honest about it and, you know, contacted, you know, race officials, race organizers, and they were able to clear that up. But it does sound like it affected, it was more than just like, oh, that one person missed their time or, you know, that one person was somehow calculated to have a, you know, an incorrect finishing time. It sounds like it affected quite a few people. And the weirdest thing to me is just that people who weren't even there
got times. That's the weirdest part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they weren't even there. So
very odd.
Yeah.
Very odd. But I mean, I guess these things do happen. It's not, you know, the biggest deal. We hope that nobody takes an incorrect time. Well, I mean, hopefully they get all the times corrected to the best that they can. And hopefully nobody takes, you know, a fraudulent time essentially and try to, you know, register for a Boston or
or New York or Chicago or anything like that. Yeah.
And we actually are pretty familiar with the timing company, and they actually do normally a great job at all the races. It's actually a company that when I see their name, actually know it's going to be a pretty well run race and everything's going to go smooth. But
yeah, we feel fairly confident with the races that they're doing the timing for.
But I guess once in a while, things do happen.
Stuff happens.
Yeah, nothing to flip out over or anything like that. All right, let's get into, I guess, the animal portion of the podcast, I guess.
This is the animal portion of our program.
We're starting in Jersey.
So the New Jersey's Cow Run 10 miler, good distance, actually featured actual cows on the race course. Thankfully, the cows were...
Now, was that a selling point? Like, oh, come and see cows on the race?
You know, I don't know.
You know, every mile we'll have cow entertainment, take a picture with a local cow.
Local cow. Thankfully, the cows that were there were very docile. And when I'm talking about on the race course, like literally on the race course.
Like in your way.
Like in your way where you're trying to run, not like off to the side. I mean, they were also off to the side, but literally where you're trying to run. A farmer that lives along the race course was actually instructed by... a race official. I don't know if it was the director who actually instructed him to create an authentic experience for the runners. So he actually poured grain right in the center of the road next to his property. So of course,
that's where the cows went.
Yep, the cows went over there. And this caused a little bit of an issue when the lead cyclist was coming through and couldn't quite get through the cows. You know, some of them moved a little bit, but so the lead cyclist actually had to get off the road and onto like the grass that was right there, the adjacent grass. And then a lot of the lead runners had to either go in between the cows or get on the grass or dodge the cows. And then I think some of the cows moved over, but some were busy. They were busy eating. So I think the report was that there was just one injury related to cows blocking the road.
Okay.
Which I think there was one runner who was trying to avoid a cow and the cow moved or something. Anyways, this runner took a spill, but I think it was just like a scraped knee or something like that. So yeah.
Did make for some interesting pictures.
I did.
I will put a link in the show notes because, yeah, there's some interesting pictures from the race.
Yeah.
It's definitely some authentic scenery.
Right.
I guess you could think of.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely have run by cows before, race and not race, you know, just on some trail runs. But I'm thinking back to that one race, that trail race where some of the, at Rocky Ridge, you were some of the lead runners. Were actually running downhill, pretty steep hill.
Right.
And there was like cows running alongside them. I don't know. I'm thinking to get out of the way, but yeah, I kind of remember that picture too. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have some here in the San Francisco Bay Area. If you're out in kind of the East Bay is what we call it in out on some of the trails out in the East Bay, there's lots of cows. And most of the regional parks that kind of make up the East Bay. And so you're always going
to see them quite
a bit. I was
going
to say run into cows, but I don't mean that
literally.
Although the cows in the East Bay have known to be pretty stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
Either they just won't get out of your way. They've been known to charge at you.
Right. And that's why I'm always kind of careful when I come up on them. Even if it's the same park I always go to, if I get close to them, I slow down. Try not to make eye contact. But still keep an eye on them. You know, and if there's any little ones out there, you know, try to like avoid.
Right.
Separate. I don't know. Anyways.
All right. Part two of Animal Kingdom.
Part two of Animal Kingdom. All right, so runners weren't the only ones running the Easter 5K in Oregon. This time we're way on the other side over in Oregon. Buddy, the elk, ran the majority of the race as well. He's an elk that's fairly well known to the area. He was actually raised in captivity, and then he was later released. And this is why they think that he's like so comfortable around humans and mm-hmm. you know was able to run most of the race and not you know freak out that he was around a lot of humans. But after the race, wildlife officials actually moved him to a preserve about 300 miles away. So he probably won't be running that race again.
That sucks. No legacy chances for him or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bummer. It's another one where I'll link to because the pictures, I think, of the elk is actually funnier than the cows.
He looks like he's having a really good time.
He looks like he's part of the, I mean, I guess that's what he is, part of the community. And he's just out, You know, I think he saw his community out going for a run on the weekend and he's said, like, hey, this
me
looks
too.
Like an awesome
it's
idea.
Like, nobody told me, but here we go. Yeah, and actually, in even one of the pictures, he's actually like looking back, almost like, you know, when you would be looking over your shoulder if you're like the lead runner.
Right.
You know, like to see where everybody's at. So it's pretty funny.
All right, let's get away from the animals. Let's get into, I guess, little people. Is that what we're getting? It's kids.
Yeah, we're getting to kids.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've mentioned, you know, Marathon Maniacs before. We are both Marathon Maniacs, and quite a few of our listeners are Marathon Maniacs. But the newest thing that's kind of rolled out are the Mini Maniacs. I didn't see an actual official, you know, release or bulletin or anything about the program. Mm-hmm. I just saw it, you know, posted, and then went to the URL that was there, and it was all spelled out. So basically, it's for kids that are really into running. So the Mini Maniacs program. It was actually created by, like I mentioned, the same people that created Marathon Maniacs and Half Fanatics. And it doesn't specify at least I couldn't find, the age that this is for, just for kids. And it's a little bit structured a bit differently than the Marathon Maniacs program and the Half Fanatics group.
Thankfully.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It consists of an 8-week running program with fun and challenging running activities. And then once the child is signed up, they receive a brochure map to track their fitness journey, an interactive online map to track their miles, a Mini Maniac kids tech tee. And actually, I've seen pictures of them posted, the Mini Maniacs wearing them. So it's pretty cute. And then a Mini Maniac finisher medal and an official club number inside the cave. That's what they call it. So
they
get assigned a number. So the last one I had seen posted like a couple of days ago, I think was like number 8 or something.
So they started at essentially 1
yeah.
for kids?
As far as I know, yeah. So levels are actually based on the amount of mileage that's run within an 8-week period of time. So they do have different levels like they do for Half Fanatics and for Marathon Maniacs. But instead of doing, you know, like 3 marathons in 3 days or something like that, it's more of how many miles are run within the 8-week period of time. And the first level, the main Maniac Cat, is 52.4 miles in 8 weeks. And it goes all the way to level 10, the Lion, which is 157.2 miles in 8 weeks.
Okay. I'm just running through the
math. That's like 78, 79 miles per month on that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just glad that...
Less than 20 per week for the highest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that, you know, the asylum, the Marathon Maniacs didn't, you know... I mean, I like the idea of getting the kids involved. I'm just glad we didn't set them to the same standards that we did for everyone else. And because I don't necessarily want to be encouraging kids to run a marathon every weekend.
Correct.
In any shape or form. Don't think that's the best idea, but this is a really cool way to kind of get the youngsters involved in running and kind of out there going after their own little challenges, I guess is the best way to look at it. So, and if you're a family that, you know, mom and dad or something like that is, you know, they're maniacs, it's kind of a cool way if they have kids to kind of get them involved and on the same routine. So, all right, last story. Records.
Yes. I think we've mentioned him before, but I can't remember how long ago. Mr. Ed Whitlock from Canada actually has set more master's records. He actually set 2 world records. I know we've talked about him before.
We have, because I'm just pulling up his picture and I recognize this guy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I know he's set other records before, but he actually just added 2 world indoor records to his list of records, in the 1500 and 3000 meters. This was competing at the Canadian Masters Nationals at the Toronto Track and Field Center. He turned 85 a few weeks ago. He actually shattered the 1500 world record by going sub 7, 6:38.87. So,
yeah. I think, as we've said before, the nice thing about being a runner into your 70s and your 80s, you know, it's not a lot of competition. So,
right.
It's your age group possibilities are skyrocket at that point in time. But it's cool seeing kind of some of these records that, can be achieved. And I don't know, there's something cool about seeing somebody in their 70s or 80s, you know, out on the track, kind of laying down some type of record.
Yeah.
Or another.
It's just out there, period. But then.
True.
With the record to boot. So
it's very, very inspiring. At least it is to me anyways. All right. We do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, Jabra, and their Sport Pulse wireless earbuds. We continue to let you know all about them. I'll be rocking them in my, I like saying rocking, in my race tomorrow, kind of back to that routine. They're super comfortable, super secure in your ears. I've had no problems with mine popping out or falling out or any issues, anything like that. It does have inline control, so I adjust the volume right there. No issues with that. Coolest part, they do monitor your heart rate, so will come in handy for my race tomorrow. Then kind of keep myself on pace and make sure I don't blow up too early. Having that heart rate will be a little extra guide that I can use for that. Easily connects to your iPhone or Android phone. Works with all running apps. I'll be using it with Run Meter, but you can use it with Run Keeper and Amundo or the dedicated Jabra app just for that. So head over to jabra.com/embracerunning for exclusive offers and product discounts. And like we said, we're giving away one in March. We actually haven't pulled the name for that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have time to sneak in there for our March giveaway if you get to this episode right away. So head over there and get your name in and perhaps you will win a free pair. So remember, Jabra, this is where it starts. All right, let's jump into shoes. Is that a good segue?
Okay.
No,
sure.
Not really. So over at runrepeat.com, they actually had a pretty interesting survey about running shoe prices. Pretty in-depth. My cell phone's going off, sorry. In-depth survey of shoe prices over at Run Repeat. They actually have lots of running shoe reviews. It's actually a pretty cool resource. But they kind of went in-depth. I think they pulled the numbers at the beginning of March, kind of looking at prices and discounts involved in shoes. And so there's some interesting tidbits that we can look at it like that. The big thing is kind of looking at the difference between purchasing shoes online versus purchasing shoes from your local running store. So a couple of the facts that we're going to pull from that. 86% of all running shoes are available at the discounted price online. So that's like all shoes.
Pretty much.
At 86%.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing you should note on this is this just means that at least one specific size had a discount. So obviously, if you've ever looked for shoes, you've definitely seen that, you know, that size 14 men's might be at a discount a lot of the time, whereas that size 10 shoe in a men's,
that's a more popular size.
More popular shoe, much more common, sells a lot more, might not have the same type of discounts. But
I've done that quite a few times where I go on to like a specific online, you know, store, I'll call it that. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, my shoes are so cheap. And then you click on, it's like 2 sizes available. And then for women's, it would be like 6 and like 12.
Yeah, that always seems to happen with, I think, one of our favorites, Running Warehouse, and their kind of some of their clearance or big sales. Seems so awesome on the front. And then when you dig in, it's like, oh, I don't wear a size 14. So I'm out of luck. Or I don't wear a size, trying to think a small size for men, 6, I don't know.
8 maybe? I think that's kind of small for men, right?
I don't know. I'll go even smaller and just say 6, but I'm nowhere near that. So some other facts to pull out of it. Running shoes are about $5.60 more expensive for every ounce heavier they are. So the more material that goes into the shoe, the more expensive the shoe is. Seems kind of logical.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there's a cost of goods there. The more arch support you request, the more expensive the running shoe is.
Yeah, that one I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess, again, if you're providing more than, you know, more material, more support.
I guess if you need the support, you're willing to I guess you're more okay with maybe paying more for it too. I don't know.
Yeah.
The worse the reviews of a running shoe, the higher the discount. So, thankfully.
Well, that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that could kind of correlate. It could correlate to popularity. Multi-sport brands are discounted 12.95% more than running specific brands. So kind of, you know, your typical mainstays are going to be more expensive in the running shoe community. And then competition shoes are 17% cheaper than everyday running shoes. So, but that was kind of interesting because mm-hmm. you might be running less in those competition shoes. So maybe you're willing to pay more, but not really the case in that scenario.
Right.
So other tidbits, in general, you'll save about 38% buying running shoes online. That's on average. So
that's pretty significant.
It's a significant difference. I mean, I think that really leads into probably that big discussion of where we should be buying our running shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether we're going to go online for shoes or visit our local running store. And as you know, based on contracts that these stores have to sign, a lot of these stores basically have to stick to MSRP. So, I mean, we all pretty much recognize that when you go to your local running store, you're basically paying MSRP, full price, for your shoe. Once in a while, you might see some type of promotion or some type of deal. Obviously, they'll have, you know, discontinued models for less. But basically, you're paying full price. Certain stores have discount programs.
Right. So, yeah. If you're part of like that program.
Yeah. You know, you give them your email and you're on a list and you'll get, I'm trying to think of one here locally. I think you get 10%. It's like 10% back or something, but that's on your next purchase type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of credited to your account. If you think of Roadrunner Sports, you become a member of their thing and you get additional discount because you're a member, although you pay for that.
Yeah. But then I think you usually get the general discount's like 20%, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I still will stick to the fact that if you're buying a new, you know, if you're a new runner and you're going out there and, you know, getting your first serious pair of running shoes, I still think your best bet is to go local and, you know, you have somebody with hopefully a little bit of experience who can kind of guide you in which shoe to select, and then you get to try a bunch of stuff on there in the store. If you're a more experienced runner and you kind of know what you like, or you're looking to buy the exact same model of, you know, for you, mm-hmm. if you're just going to buy a Brooks Adrenaline GTS, right?
Yep.
I don't think you need to go into the store
to
make that purchase.
Right, right.
Although I do tell people to, you know, it's a good thing to support your local running store.
Right. So it's always kind of that balance there.
Yeah. I mean, they're a part of our running community. You know, a lot of times your local stores are supporting local races and local training programs and
local run clubs.
Yeah.
And are often putting on, you know, free events like weekly group runs or mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
So, I mean, if you're participating in that kind of stuff through your local store and you're taking advantage of that kind of stuff, I think it's fair to buy a pair of shoes from them every once in a while, I guess. Don't just go there for the free group runs and the free food that they might, you know, don't go there just for beer night every month.
Right.
I think that's a little disingenuous, I think. Although I have heard from people before too that, and I haven't seen any of those types of stores around here, that they have local running stores, but they really don't do anything for the community. That mm-hmm. they're really just a store
right.
selling shoes. And so I've heard from those people who just say, you know, hey, I have no connection to my local shoe store because they don't really do anything except sell shoes. So they're really no different than, you know, buying stuff
any
from your local
store.
Grocery store type of thing. So
right.
If that's your situation, definitely go online. But if you know exactly what you're looking for, online is a great way to save money. And then you have so many places now that offer pretty awesome return policies.
That's true.
You know, I'm always talking about Running Warehouse. You know, it's kind of nice that they throw an actual, I think it's UPS, right? Return label in the box.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Basically all you have to do is fill out the back of the form and throw it in the box. And then you already have the label and you just try the shoes on. You don't like it. You just send it back. It's nothing to you. And they'll credit you or make an exchange or whatever they want. And it's pretty easy. And they're not the only ones that do that. So. Anything else from this study that we should just mention a little bit of?
I think you covered it pretty well.
Well, one other thing, talking about just specific to brands, most expensive brands, Hoka 1-1. Yeah. Of course, that had to be my favorite brand, but
right.
I've talked about in the past that
I'm
they are.
I'm not surprised by that.
Right. They are pretty expensive if you buy it MSRP. Second in terms of most expensive was Newton, followed by Salomon, which I've never owned a pair. I've never even tried on a pair of Newtons. But I know Salomon, in my eyes, I always see as a very expensive brand.
Mm-hmm.
With all their stuff, actually, Salomon, like, they have some really cool stuff. I'm thinking more of clothing and gear and stuff.
Yeah.
But it tends to be really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. On the cheapest side, Skechers, which is interesting.
Yeah. I saw that when that was mentioned, too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's bad on my part, but I didn't even, like, think of Skechers, like, when we were...
Talking about shoes?
Yeah. But then I just thought it was interesting that it's on the lower end of the scale, or at the low end. Yeah, of the scale.
Yeah. Yeah, Skechers, I mean, they've been coming on really strong in terms of recognition and probably quality. I'm hoping it matches that. I still haven't ever purchased a pair, but it's kind of interesting that they're on the cheapest side, and they are one of the ones that on here are cited as kind of having very high discounts on their shoes. So sometimes can be 53%. When you kind of look at, according to the study, the four big brands, Nike, Brooks, Asics, and Adidas, are discounted from 31 to 40% on average when buying them online. So, and I guess the last point that I'll make, trail running shoes on average 6.6%. I guess that's $4.80 more expensive than road running shoes.
Huh.
So not really.
I'm trying to think back about like what I've spent. I guess I guess my trail shoes have been more expensive than my road shoes if you just, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's interesting when I think about it, I've always paid less for trail shoes, but I
really?
Think than my typical road running shoes.
Yeah.
Now I should put the caveat, I buy Hokas, so I'm buying some of the most expensive road shoes that I could buy, but I think part of that might have been my willingness to spend more on trail shoes. So I think I've never been really...
Spend more on trail shoes or road shoes?
I'm sorry, to spend more on road shoes.
Oh, okay.
Because I've traditionally done a lot more road running than trail running.
Right, okay.
I'm willing to spend more personally on my road shoes than on a trail shoe that I might wear, I was going to say back in the day, maybe, you know, once a month, once every 2 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wearing them a lot more because I'm doing more trail running, but that's my own personal willingness. There's a lot less selection in trail shoes too. I mean, the road selection is... You go to a shoe store and it can just go on for miles, and the trail section much, much smaller.
Yeah.
Although it's gotten bigger over the last
3 or 4 years. Yep.
I think I remember probably going into a shoe store 5 years ago and, you know, looking at the trail section, I think it was one little column on the wall for the men's
trail
shoes.
I remember that. And I remember like each big name running company, like when I was looking at trail shoes, like had like one trail shoe. So it's like, okay, so if you're going to go with this company, it's that trail shoe. If you're going to go with that company, it's that trail shoe.
Right.
So, I mean, I know I'm making a generalization, but I kind of remember that being the case too. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I'll throw in one more, heel to toe drop. No difference in MSRP sales prices or discount percentage for running shoes with different heel to toe drops. So just nothing going on there. I guess mm-hmm. that's just not a basis for them pricing it at all. So, I will put a link to the full study that's online. Lots of good information. Lots of charts and graphs if you're like me and you like that. So I definitely had fun.
It's about shoes. So if you like that.
Yeah. I mean, I keep saying I'll throw in one more thing. The one thing that's not listed on here is Running Warehouse as one of the stores. So that's kind of interesting because I know that's kind of our go-to
mm-hmm.
For that type of stuff. One of the carriers on here that has big discounts on shoes, that's an online retailer, Sierra Trading Post, which I can't say that I've ever gone to them looking for running shoes. It's somebody who I've gone to in the past looking for like camping stuff, but was never, it's kind of like a general outdoor camping. Think of it almost as like REI style store, if you're not familiar.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're familiar with REI. But I've never really thought to go there with specifically just to look for running shoes. So that was one of the ones with big discounts, and one of the ones with least in terms of discounts was Roadrunner Sports, which is a very big local presence in a lot of locations and a big online presence. Mm-hmm. But that's the one we were talking about earlier where if you're not a member or catch them on sale, that you're basically going to be paying full price. So they don't do huge discounts just in general,
right?
Either online or in store. Probably a lot of their online stuff is limited by the fact that they are a local store. So they're trying to, you know, play both ends of that scenario. So. All right, that's going to do it for shoe prices, I guess. We had some people running today, right?
Yeah. We just wanted to, you know, hope that, I guess, and wish, or whichever word is the correct one, that Andy had a good run at the Run the Bluegrass and Frank at Hershey 10K.
Yeah. Yeah. So congrats, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
All right, let's get to some feedback.
Message received.
We heard from Frank, who was thanking us for the podcast. It's been a big part of his lifestyle change. He listens mostly when he's grading lumber in a sawmill. I have to say it's the first time.
That's super cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. So he's hoping for some good luck for the Hershey 10K, which took place today. It's his first 10K and his second race. He was also asking us when we would consider someone a runner. He said he was just curious because when he wants to be honest when somebody asks him if he's a runner. And I think we both, like, without any hesitation said, you're a runner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you're running, if you need any more reason, you're racing. Not that that defines it, but mm-hmm. that's like an added reason. You're listening to a running podcast when you're grading lumber in a sawmill. I think you're a runner.
I think you're definitely a runner. Yeah. If you're listening to a running podcast, that's not something that I don't think a jogger, I'm putting the air quotes up, would do. But I think if you're asking the question whether you're, you know, or whether someone's a real runner, then you're probably a real runner by that point. So
yeah,
by any measurement we use, you're a real runner. So congrats. Right.
And I would even just take out that whole word real and just say you're a runner.
That's true.
Yeah. I wouldn't use that. So, okay. Heard from Emmanuel, who ran the New York Road Runners, New York City half.
Want to get mouthful.
That. Yeah. So it was both awesome and a little bit horrible. I like that the horrible part is just a little bit.
Isn't that every race?
Yeah, but this, but this one was a little bit horrible for a unique reason. So he said on the bright side, he was actually watching this race a year ago on TV while he was doing laundry and while he was training for his first half marathon. And he remembers thinking like that he was wishing that he could run it one day. And then, of course, he did this year. Mm-hmm. So when he crossed the finish line, he had tears rolling down his face because he felt, you know, really proud of himself, which you should. And then, you know, got a good medal. He sent us a picture of that. We haven't gotten too many medal pictures lately. So if anybody wants to share, please. Mm. Yeah.
Send
them our way. And as for the horrible part, he actually lost his car keys during the race. So yeah, that's
bummer.
Pretty horrible.
And a huge pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of my like worst fears as far as like just losing the car keys and they're just gone.
I'm super OCD, I think, when it comes to losing keys in general.
Yeah.
So I know that when I have to run with a car key, you know, I have a zipper, I have a couple shorts with the zippered pocket on the back.
Yeah.
Kind of right above your butt, you know? And I put it in there and I zipper it closed. And I think I end up checking to make sure it's there probably 5 times before I start running. And then probably, you know, every, you know, 4 miles, if it's a longer run, you know, I think I double check to make sure that it's still there. Although what good is that going to do? Because if it's not there, it's not there anymore.
Well, you know, but I guess you lost it in the last 4 miles since you checked it.
I guess I could turn around and go back. But
narrowed it down.
That's a huge bummer. And I'm sure that happens pretty often. That's why I don't know if people do it anymore. The old thing back in the day people would do is, you know, they'd actually leave their car keys, you know, inside a fender or on their tire. Mm-hmm. That way they wouldn't lose it out on the run.
Like it would be there.
Yeah. I don't know how people actually still do that, but that seemed to be much more common back in the day.
Yeah. Yep. We heard from Forbes, who, although he hasn't been racing, he has been enjoying our podcast. His racing season actually will be starting soon. This month, I believe. So, and then he will also be at Flying Pig in Cincinnati in May. He's doing the three-way, which is the 10K, the 5K, and the half marathon. And then it's with extra cheese, meaning he's doing the 1 mile run Friday night. I think that's pretty funny. Three-way with extra cheese. So he's hoping to see us there in 2017. It's definitely on our list. Flying Pig has been on our list. It's just one of those like just timing things, you know, like there's mm-hmm. there's another marathon. So like I guess this year we have Grandma's in June. Don't necessarily want to do one in May.
If I had to make a prediction right now, I will say that we will be at Flying Pig, but I think it's going to be
2018. Yeah.
And part of that is because I was looking at the Vancouver Marathon, which they're basically the same weekend, if I'm correct. And so I think I'm probably going to lean towards Vancouver for next year, for 2017,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe Flying Pig in 2018, because if I'm reading their website correctly, 2018 will actually be their 20th anniversary.
Oh, yeah, we should go there in 2018.
So I think it's always fun to do kind of the big anniversaries for races, because sometimes they do give you something a little extra special, or they do something a little different. So I'm tentatively, I think, going to schedule that for 2018. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, see, there's just so many races and so little time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We heard from Ruth. This is actually when we were out in London. She was hoping that the UK was treating us well, which we were treated well. Yep, yep. She was giving us some good luck wishes for North London and was sympathizing with us that it was a little bit colder than what we were used to. So, which we did mention in our recap. So.
And it turned out not to be really a big issue. So.
No.
Yeah, worked out well.
I think we were more worried about it the day before than what we actually needed to be. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Heard from Patrick, who ran the Shamrock Half Marathon in Virginia Beach. He said it was pouring rain and windy. However, within the first couple of miles, the rain and wind calmed down a bit, but everyone was already pretty much looking wet at that point. This was his first race longer than 4 miles since an ankle injury sidelined him over the summer and into the fall of last year. He said he felt great out there. His goal was to finish somewhere under around 2:10, but he didn't really care too much. Halfway through the race, he realized he felt really good, so he picked up the pace and ended up finishing in just over 2 hours. So 2 hours and 38 seconds. So that's pretty awesome.
Kind of killed it based on kind of, you know, what
you were thinking.
Prediction
and,
was.
Yeah. He said the race was really well organized. Lots of water stations and bathrooms along the way. Some nice swag at the end. He would definitely recommend this race. So that was the Shamrock Half Marathon in Virginia Beach. He said he almost forgot to mention that there is a 3 mile hill climb from miles 3 to 6.
That part doesn't sound fun at all.
Right. I like how he just at the very end just kind of casually throws it in there. So heard from Libby, who unfortunately did not get into New York City Marathon this year. She said, although she did get into the Beach to Beach 10K in Maine, which sells out super fast. So they do some regular registration and a lottery. So she's very happy that she got in through the lottery. She also entered her name in for Marine Corps Marathon. And she's now keeping her fingers crossed for that. If she doesn't get in, then she's either going to be running Hartford or Philly. Or Hartford and Philly. I'm not sure if it's both or one or the other. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, we didn't mention New York lottery at all.
Yeah, we didn't.
You obviously by now know whether you're in or out if you tried to get in. So congrats to those who did get in. If you didn't get in, bummer. I guess you got to keep trying for next year.
Yeah.
And then just a reminder, I guess, on the same topic, Chicago Marathon lottery is still open, I think, for another 10 days.
Yeah, I think it's until the 12th,
double check
that.
So
yeah.
If you didn't get into New York and you're looking for a big one, Chicago's a good choice and we'll be out there for sure this year. So
yeah. And for Marine Corps, I don't know if everybody was notified already, but I did see some people posting this past week got in. So I don't know if everybody's notified already or not. But it's if everybody hasn't been told, then I think it's happening soon here. Okay. So yeah. We heard from Nir, who ran the Jerusalem Half Marathon. Said it was great, not easy, but lots of fun. I kind of like that whole description there. Said Jerusalem is a city built on lots of hills, so which makes doesn't make for a very fast marathon. That totally makes sense. But there's certainly lots of history all around. He actually sent us a picture of a race picture, you know, one of the official race pictures, with one of his friends from Florida, excuse me. And he said most of the big races there in Israel use runnerscanner.com system, which is basically they use a square black barcode that you have on your bib, and then the code automatically identifies the runner in pictures. And I don't know, somehow links with your Facebook account. And so then the pictures are automatically posted on your Facebook account.
See, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a good use of technology to kind of make things a little...
So that was one of the pictures that he shared was one that was just, you know, uploaded to his Facebook account because it's all somehow connected, you know, so it was able to identify and stuff. So he said that there was a new women's record that was actually set by the winning female runner, Joan Kagan of Kenya, who finished with a time of 2:38:30, slicing more than 7 minutes off the previous women's record for the course. So that's 7 minutes. That's
big difference.
Pretty significant. So actually I did ask him a question as far as what about those runners who don't have a Facebook account. So I'm curious what happens to those pictures. And he said he wasn't exactly sure what happened. He knows they get them some other way, but I'm thinking probably the more traditional, like email.
What do you mean? So, somebody doesn't have no, I'm just kidding.
There are people who don't have Facebook accounts. Yes. heard from Ian, who's actually giving us some information that we mentioned in our race recap last time.
And did a horrible job of describing, probably.
Right. So thank you for the information. So he's saying that the gels they use are usually, I don't know if it's ISO gels or ISO gels, not sure which way you say it, which contain a little bit of water. So they're actually a little less goopy than goo gels, and you can eat them without water. So that makes sense, because remember we were talking about how, or I don't know if I mentioned it or both of us, that the consistency of the the gels that we saw out there were a little bit more watery.
Right.
Yeah, and less thick. So that makes sense. He said, because you're able to take them without water, it leaves you to drink to thirst rather than having to drink water to take your gels and then having to drink additional water or fluid. So he actually sent a picture of some of the gels mm-hmm. that they use there. So one of them was the High Five Isogel Orange Flavor and Science and Sport Go Isotonic Energy Apple Flavor. He also sent a picture of one of the bottles that we were mentioning that people were running with, the handheld bottle that actually just has like a hole in the middle, basically, mm-hmm. so you can put your hand through. And he said they are easier to carry due to them having the hand grip through the center of the bottle. And then the one that he sent over, the picture that he sent over was made by Caramore, but mm-hmm. there are other brands and sizes available. So, which actually makes sense. That was one thing I hadn't thought about as far as like sizes go, because we all have different size hands. Mm-hmm. So I may need a smaller bottle just to even hold than somebody who has a larger hand.
That's true, especially since this is a fixed size,
I guess
is the way you can say it.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, the bottles that we usually carry have, you know, it's the plastic bottle, but then there's the strap on it that holds your hand.
And yeah, so that you can tighten or loosen
based
on the size of your hand.
Yeah, so thanks for knowing exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Because otherwise, I thought we had lost everybody. And actually, maybe I think I'll take those pictures and I'll include that on the blog post with the North London Half episode.
That's a good idea.
That we can kind of see what we were trying to describe talk about. So it kind of makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us to the end of the episode. We are racing tomorrow. It's not mm-hmm. too often we actually say that. We'll be in Sacramento, California, running the Sectown 10, mm-hmm. so 10-miler. Neither one of us has high hopes for fast times.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely not getting a fast time. Yeah.
The vacation and kind of the, I don't know what to call it, kind of the attempted bounce back here to kind of get back into the routine. But might not be a fast race, but it should be a fun race. I think it'll be, I guess for the 10-miler, it's two loops of mm-hmm. a 5-mile loop or 5-mile course, whatever the best way to describe it is. So yeah, so we'll be back on the next episode and kind of at least recap some of that stuff along with other news and whatever else is going on. So anything else before we get out of here?
Nope, that's it.
All right, that's it.
The website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. You could find us on Facebook at facebook.com/embracerunning. Send us any comments, questions, or feedback at feedback@embracerunning.com or leave us a voicemail at 925-400-7223. If you enjoy the show, give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, embrace running.